From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Here's how my head, which is always lost in the garden, I guess, works. The first thing I thought about when the pandemic started, when we got news of a new pathogen in the world, was how many plant pathogens I've written about in my career and the trajectories of each of them. Dr. Margaret McGrath is a longtime vegetable pathologist for Cornell University, whom I've turned to over and again to better understand many plant diseases. Meg, in turn, turns to backyard gardeners like us to help her learn more about basil downy mildew and late blight in tomatoes, and now cucurbit downy mildew too. It's true, she wants to know what we're seeing in our backyards. We can help her and vice versa. More in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
Besides her role as a scientist at Cornell's Long Island Horticultural Research and Extension Center in Riverhead, New York, Meg McGrath is a keen gardener. Her applied research aims to improve the management of important vegetable diseases and develop effective components for integrated pest management programs. Hi, Meg. How are you and how's the garden?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to chat with you. The garden's doing okay. I've got a few diseases as usual, unfortunately, but I'm not going to admit that on air. Oh, did I already do that?
I think you did that. It's the cat's out of the bag. The pathogen is out of the bag.
Indeed.
Yeah. So I have to ask before we get started with the serious topics at hand, as in our what's in our gardens right now and so forth. I guess I have to ask, as a plant pathologist, do you think you had a sort of different take on the news in early 2020 of the coronavirus? Because, you know, you've spent a career investigating pathogens. And even with my very sort of intermediate level layperson knowledge, all I kept thinking was, this is going to take a long time. You know, this is a long haul ahead.
I had a couple thoughts. I wasn't thinking so much long haul, but there was a couple things that went through my head. One was, thank goodness this virus, the COVID virus, does not move like some plant pathogens can. Mm-hmm. So the cucurbit downy mildew one you mentioned that we monitor over winters in Florida, it moves through the entire East Coast every year. I mean, that's a lot of movement. You know, the fungal spores and oomycete spores, which is what that pathogen is, are dispersed by air and they can move quite a distance. Thank goodness that doesn't happen for us. We would have all been in trouble. It wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
Staying 6 feet away from other people.
Right. Six miles would have been more like it. Yeah.
Oh, even more. The other thought that went through my head is in the fall of 2019, we had a new virus affecting tomatoes, particularly in greenhouses, tomato brown rugose fruit virus. It had a lot of similarities. It was transmitted more easily than any previous virus we dealt with. It's a mechanically transmitted one, so workers are moving it on their hands. It is thought to have originated as a host jump. So, you know, so many interesting parallels. And then the other odd thought that went through my head is, thank goodness COVID doesn't make us more beautiful like the virus that affected tulips many years ago.
Oh,
and
right.
The tulip breaking virus. Isn't that an odd pathologist thought?
Right. So that's that where we see in those 300-year-old paintings, you see the broken, as in the colors are kind of mosaic-y, all irregular, many colors in one flower and so forth.
And they were beautiful. And those bulbs were sold for many, many dollars. They were valued. Yes. They knew there was something about the bulb. Didn't realize at that point it was a virus.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it is crazy. It's funny how each of us has our take on, of course, everything, our perspective. But I thought, you know, with plant diseases, you said you have some that we're not going to confess to in your own garden, but we have had in many parts of the country extreme weather of varying kinds. And of course, that can contribute. Kind of what's on the hit parade in the Northeast in terms of plant diseases, because you're located in Long Island and a lot of your work is focused on in our region. And anywhere else around the country, are any sort of headline items?
Well, the downy mildews, and we are always monitoring those and interested in knowing where they are and being aware of how widespread they are. It adds to our knowledge base and helps us in giving advice to growers, particularly with the cucurbit downy mildew one. As I commented earlier, it's moving up through the eastern coast each year. It occurs at different times. So this year it was a little bit earlier up here in the Northeast. I saw it on Long Island a little bit earlier than I ever have before. We see it anywhere from mid-July to early September. It's a big range. So that's where it's really valuable to know when gardeners are seeing it, as well as growers, just have a feel for, okay, is it out there early this year? What crops are getting hit? The pathogen varies it's got different strains that affect the different cucurbit types. So we see it first in cucumbers, then cantaloupes. We may see it in squash in the Northeast and watermelons. We may not, depending upon what strain makes it up here. So the monitoring is really important.
So we'll talk more about that and how we can all contribute. But first, I just want to back up to downy mildews. So these are, they're not fungal. They're kind of fungus-like in a way. They're what?
Exactly. We used to think they were fungi. We now recognize they're more closely related to some algae, and they're called oomycetes.
Okay. Oomycetes.
Oh, correct.
Yeah. Okay. Oomycete.
Yes. And we're not staggering.
No. And so what are the symptoms? So in like the cucurbit, so what do they look like? How would I know if I had that going on?
A typical symptom with them is an angular yellow leaf spot. It varies amongst the hosts how clear the angular look is, but what's happening is the pathogen, as it's growing in the leaf, it can't get by major veins.
Oh.
You end up with this angular look. And then on the underside of the leaf, you will see sporulation of the pathogen, and it's typically a gray sporulation, particularly with basil and cucurbit downy mildew.
Okay.
Pathogen doesn't sporulate well on all of the cucurbit hosts. It sporulates beautifully on cucumber, well on basil. And those are different pathogens. That's another thing to be aware of. The downy mildews are all very specialized. So they're not going to multiple different hosts. There's a bunch of other downy mildews. Some of them produce white spores, like the one that goes to lettuce.
Yes. And how long have pathologists known about downy mildews? Is this something because, you know, I don't remember it earlier in my years as a gardener hearing about them as much as I have in the last decade or something. I guess it was because of the basil one that was so devastating. What year was that? That it sort of knocked out huge amounts of basil crop.
It arrived in the U.S. We were first aware of it in the U.S. in fall of 2007.
Right.
And then it was somewhat widespread the next year.
Right.
That's an interesting odd one in that you go back in the records and it was found in Uganda back in the 30s and then nothing until it ended up in Europe. And it is a pathogen that can be in seed, and that's how it's gotten spread widely around the world.
Oh.
And then it produces these wind dispersed spores, and
okay,
that's its next method of getting around.
And so is the future, if we're going to solve this or manage this, is it management or is it, and maybe it's different for the cucurbit versus the basil, et cetera. I don't know, but is it resistant varieties being developed? What's the race to sort of stay ahead of these things about? Like, what are the components?
Both resistant varieties and fungicides for commercial growers. My experience, at least with basil downy mildew, with the organic products that are out there, is it's too hard to reach the level of control that you need. I mean, as a home gardener, we can cut off the part of the leaf that's affected, but to market it, the leaves have got to be perfect.
Right.
So very hard. We've got some conventional fungicides that conventional growers can use that are extremely effective. Resistant varieties is always number one in managing diseases like this that can't be avoided. The pathogen can evolve to overcome them. Cucurbit downy mildew has been a big issue since 2004, and that's the year that we believe either the pathogen evolved, we brought a new strain in from Europe that was able to overcome the resistance that was in, that had been bred into cucumbers back in, I think it was the 30s, which was exquisitely good resistance. But the pathogen evolved to overcome it. We believe the basal downy mildew pathogen now in the U.S. has overcome some of our resistant varieties. I've been getting reports.
Oh, and that's scary.
Yeah.
Meg, come on. No.
Yeah.
No.
What is on the horizon? And it gets into the back to the topic of new technologies and people being nervous about new technologies is genetically breeding resistance, because you can do it a lot faster. Basil is particularly difficult to breed because you can end up, when you get crosses, you end up with a sterile plant. So amazel basil, one of the resistant varieties that came out, it can only be produced by cuttings because it doesn't produce seed. Because of the cross. One of the interesting things, now I'm not in the molecular world. I'm an old fashioned plant pathologist, but I listen to talks that my fellow pathologists do, and what they're finding now that they can just look at the genes of these plants and pathogens so inexpensively now, a lot of things are getting looked at molecularly, is they're discovering that plants that are susceptible to a pathogen have a susceptibility gene. That kind of makes sense. You know, basil is the only one that's susceptible to downy mildew. You know, why are other plants not? Well, only basil's got the susceptibility gene. So with genetic engineering, you can, with a new technology that's very specific, this CRISPR-Cas9 system, you can knock out that gene and produce a resistant variety. So that works is being done. The issue is educating about new technology, and that gets us back to COVID-19.
Right.
And the what we have now for vaccines. And I just wonder, you know, back when we first started developing the vaccines and thinking about it, if it was on the news, this is what the technology is, this is why it's going to come out faster than other vaccines. Similar to genetic engineering, you know, if scientists had talked about these things way before they came out,
right,
and so the public had time to think about it, would it make a difference in accepting some of these technologies?
Right. So education, proactive education.
And, exactly. Yeah,
not like emergency. Here's the only thing we can do. Okay. It's this or nothing. And then people resist. And understandably, because they're unaware, it's all sounds too startling and so forth. And there's resistance.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting parallel. With the basil, with the downy mildew, what does it look like? You said with the cucurbits that you have these angular yellow leaf spots and then the sporulation, the sort of is it like fuzzy whitish grayish underneath or something?
But it's fuzzy grayish.
Yeah.
So very similar to cucurbit downy mildew.
Okay.
And same kind of angular lesions, but with basil, you get those long veins that run the length, the width of the leaf. So it tends to be a yellow band until the whole leaf is affected, then the whole leaf is going to be yellow.
Okay.
With all of the downy mildews, the best time to get out there and look for the sporulation is in the morning, particularly if it was a humid night or dewy nights, the best. The spores get produced overnight, and then during the day, they get wind dispersed away. So by the end of the day, you're not going to see as many.
Okay.
The other thing a gardener can do, or a grower, if you think you've got downy mildew on a leaf, but you're not seeing the sporulation, is you take the leaf and you put it upside down on wet paper towel in a closed plastic bag, like a Ziploc bag, and sitting there overnight, it should produce its spores because you've given it a good humid environment.
So
I do that all the time.
So you would get like a spore print, so to speak, like you could from a fern, you'd get like spores on the towel. Is that the idea?
No, you've got the leaf sitting upside down.
Oh, upside down. Okay. So they'd stay on the leaf. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Now, just as in terms of possible tactical ways around some of these things, I'm always wondering if like succession crops or harvesting at a younger age, like, is there an age with, say, the basil? Does it tend to happen when the basil is getting older? Or because I, you know, basil can be, if you want to buy enough seeds, you could grow it and cut it younger and use it. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to letting the plant get big, is there a correlation between age of the plant and when this occurs, when it's more susceptible?
Not unfortunately with downy mildew.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. I do see that with powdery mildew with cucurbits.
Okay.
And that could be, that's the stress of fruit production is when right. you'll see powdery mildew. Basal downy mildew, often we don't see it until plants are a little bit older, and it's more just that it's taken time for the pathogen to finally, by chance, I mean, these spores aren't controlling where they're going. It's all the wind currents and when they by chance land on the leaves. Okay. I have seen basal downy mildew on cotyledon stage of microgreens.
Oh.
And my colleague who works on the disease in Florida has seen it on plants as soon as they emerge.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because I always wonder, you know, if there's something timing-wise I can do as an organic gardener, you know what I mean, to outsmart the pathogen or the pest or whatever, you know.
The best way to outsmart it as a gardener is grow your basil in pots, and you got humid overnights, bring the pots inside.
Okay. Okay.
And then they're not exposed to the conditions that the pathogen needs in order to infect. So the pathogen needs high humidity to produce the spores, and it also needs wetness or high humidity to infect.
Okay. Okay, good. So if we go then to another one that I know you probably hear people worrying about in advance, or maybe even sometimes generically terming, oh, my tomatoes have blight, you know, even though it's not technically blight, and especially it's not late blight. Tell us a little bit about the sort of what's going on in the tomato world right now. What are you hearing about?
Well, there are a number of diseases that affect tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
And they, oh, you're admitting you have diseases in your tomatoes too.
I think we had 13 inches of rain in the first half of July. So I think that, I think that it was pretty interesting what's going on outside.
A lot of pathogens need leaf wetness in order to infect. And these are your plants are susceptible to a number of fungal diseases.
Yes.
We people don't have too many fungi that affect us. That's probably the number one with plants. And they need leaves to be wet or high humidity in order to infect. And some of them need splashing water in order to be dispersed. And Septoria leaf spot's one of those. And that's one of the main ones I see in my garden. And this has been a bad year for Septoria leaf spot. Conventional growers are seeing more of it than usual. And that's one that will start on the lower leaves. Early blight will start on the lower leaves as well. And you get some yellowing. You also get some yellowing just because, you know, you got tomatoes for a good long period of time, and they are going to start to senesce their lower leaves. So that can happen as well. Late blight's an interesting one from the perspective that it's kind of disappeared a little bit in the Northeast, knock on wood. Huh. We've had a few cases, but nothing like back in starting in 2009, where it was very widespread, and a rainy year like this is just the perfect conditions for it. And it shows us that we've gotten a handle on managing it. And I think that reflects gardeners as well as growers are doing a better job of managing the sources. And a primary source is potato tubers that are infected. And the growers of potatoes seed potatoes and potatoes for sale for our consumption have been doing a better job of controlling late blight. So it's disappeared.
So leaving our potatoes, either accidentally or on purpose, leaving potatoes in the ground could potentially be a vector. I don't know if it's called a vector, but, you know, it could be a source.
A source. If they've got late blight.
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got to have the pathogen present.
Right. Right. So, but that's a reason, since we as backyard gardeners wouldn't be able to necessarily know that, it's better to be scrupulously clean, perform good hygiene in the fall garden, in the vegetable garden, than to potentially leave a pathogen to overwinter. Yes.
Correct. And if you're going to grow potatoes, buy seed potatoes.
Certified, especially that have been.
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Because there is a lower tolerance for late blight to be in those potatoes than the ones you buy in the grocery store to eat.
Okay. Okay, good. That's a very good point. And I think that's very, very important, is that we don't want to just start with any old potato. Yeah, good plan. So tomato wise, so that's interesting. And what are the, you said that the growers, both backyard and commercial growers, that they've learned to manage a little bit. It's that sanitation, but is it anything else that we do to avoid it? Is there anything else?
The main one is prevent, if you can prevent the source,
right?
If you don't have a pathogen present, conditions can be very favorable and you're not going to have disease.
Right.
Right. So bottom line, there are highly effective fungicides and the late for conventional growers, and late blight has not, that pathogen has not shown ability to develop the resistance to fungicides that we thought we might see.
I see.
And that's been an issue.
I see.
But you know, when commercial growers are able to control a disease, we gardeners who are not using these fungicides are less likely to see the disease. They're reducing the amount of inoculum in the world.
Right. So in our, we have 3-5 minutes, and I just wanted to talk about, I know how you can help us because I'm always pestering you for questions over the years, but how can we help you and other scientists like yourself, researchers who are need more data, so to speak. So tell us a little bit about how we communicate to you and what kind of info you're looking at for from us.
Well, the major diseases that I'm involved in monitoring are these two downy mildews we've been talking about.
Yes.
The one in basil and the one that affects cucurbits. And there are monitoring programs for those. So a gardener could check out those websites. The one for cucurbit downy mildew is CDM.IPM. And I think just Googling that, you should pick it right up.
And I'll give it with the transcript of the show on awaytogarden.com. Of course, I'll give all the links. So
For
CDM for cucurbit downy mildew.IPM pipe. Okay.
And we've added a page there that is specifically for gardeners.
And I can just say, I have it and here's where I'm located. Is that basically, it's like the way I report my birds on Cornell's ebird.org, right? Is that how it is?
Exactly. And they'll ask you to submit a photo.
Okay.
From the photo, we can diagnose it.
Okay.
Hopefully. Or someone will reach out for more information. And same thing with basil. So the basil one is at an ag pest monitor page.
Okay.
And once again, you know, there's information at that page as well about how to manage basil downy mildew for gardeners as well as growers. Both websites have a map that show where downy mildew has been found already this year, which can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And so, and those maps are kind of updated in real time that we can see how it's happening and spreading or not.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As soon as a report is confirmed, it gets posted.
Okay. And so how does that help you to know that I have it or someone in, you know, Spionk has it or someone in, you know, Douglaston has it? Or how does that help you as a scientist?
It helps me as a scientist to realize how widespread it is.
Okay.
I've also gotten a lot of comments from gardeners about conditions when they've seen it, if they see it every year, or gosh, this is the first time I've seen it. That's valuable to know just how commonly and how widespread. I had someone from Houston, I think it was 2 years ago, who's up on, you know, balcony planting.
Wow.
You know, a couple pots of basil and had downy mildew. So to realize where this pathogen can occur is, and the disease, is very helpful to know. The information is also used to let growers know where these diseases are present and therefore when they need to be thinking about using fungicides.
Right.
So it helps them reduce their fungicide use. They can wait until it's been reported and there's a risk for them. The cucurbit downy mildew program is not just monitoring, it's also forecasting where the pathogen is likely to move and infect next.
Okay. Meg McGrath from Cornell, I am so interested and I always learn so much from you. And I hope that you have a productive harvest in the garden, even though there's those unmentionable things happening. And I hope I'll talk to you again soon. Thank you for making time today.
This has been fun.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening in, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and scouting for pathogens in the meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.